kbu.fm/give or text KBU to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBU News in Depth.
KBU News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBU News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm here with Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Street Roots, talking about their new article. It's called Feeling the Squeeze: Homeless Portlanders and Service Providers Prepare for November 13th Sleeping Ban Enforcement While the Mayor's Office Dodges Questions. Welcome to the show, Kay.
Hey, Althea, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us about this today. This new piece of yours delves into, like I mentioned, the so-called daytime camping ban that the city council passed in June, and all that the public and maybe even city council don't know yet about how it's going to be enforced starting on November 13th. As we kind of get into this, can you give us a refresher on what that camping ban says?
The daytime portion of it, like you said, it's kind of been called the daytime camping ban a lot, but that is really just a one portion of the ban. At any time, it prohibits sleeping on, from what we can tell right now, potentially all public property. If not, it is a very large portion of it. You know, it's any parks, sidewalks, near waterways, busy streets, sanctioned encampments, near construction sites, near schools, near medical facilities. You know, the amount of room in the city that's public property that doesn't fit in that criteria is very limited. So it bans sleeping in those areas at all times. It also bans sleeping anywhere between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. It limits the amount of bikes someone can own. It prohibits all fires, including from like a camping stove. And there's some new restrictions on how clean someone's area has to be. And kind of the crux of all this is that people are allowed two warnings. And then on the third infraction, a police officer can ticket or arrest that person, and they will be subject to a $100 fine or up to 30 days in jail.
So just recently, Wheeler announced plans to actually start enforcing this on November 13th. But you write that his office and others in city government have been very tight-lipped about what the enforcement of what you just talked about, what that's going to look like. What are some of the things that Street Roots has been asking, and where are you still lacking answers?
There's very little information about how it will be enforced available. Like you said, the city is not willing to comment on it at all. Presumably that's due to ongoing and pending litigation against the city for this ordinance. But yeah, I mean, the mayor's office will not tell us if the police were trained specifically to enforce this ordinance, how they were trained. They won't answer questions about where people can legally sleep. You know, we asked for an updated map because the only one that's currently available really just shows public property as being blocked out. But even on that map, it doesn't actually list sleeping on private property as prohibited. So there's obviously some confusion when you get that into people's hands and they see, oh, this area is banned, this area is not, when in actuality that could be, you know, private property that they're also not allowed to sleep on. And there's just no indication of where people can currently sleep. You know, we've also reached out to HUCR, the Homeless and Urban Camping Impact Reduction Program. Wheeler's office told them not to answer our questions and instead send us to Wheeler's office, who then again did not answer our questions. Portland Police Bureau, same thing. We asked them some questions about how they were trained, you know, how often they plan to arrest people over it, that sort of thing. And same deal. They sent us to the mayor's office and the mayor's office did not respond. In the previous two instances, they simply responded that they were declining to comment. So even going outside of the city, Multnomah County said they're still analyzing what the impacts could be from the ordinance being enforced. The district attorney's office didn't even have answers for how it's planning to prosecute or not prosecute these offenses. And previously, you know, Wheeler's office had said that the district attorney was looking at alternative enforcement, and you know, the city was in support of non-criminal penalties if somebody is arrested or ticketed for it, but there's no indication that that's something that's come to fruition. So yeah, I mean, the reality right now, even Commissioner Carmen Rubio's office, and she was the lone vote back in June against this new ban, she actually, her office told us that she needed to speak with Wheeler again to see if her concerns had been addressed. The governor's office wasn't notified prior to Wheeler announcing enforcement. So there's just a lot of confusion right now and a real lack of clarity on the city's part about what enforcement will look like.
I guess from your expertise, is it likely that they haven't thought about it? Part of the whole reason that they didn't enforce it to begin with over the summer was the need to prepare, right?
Yeah, there was kind of this rollout period where, according to the city, they were going to hit the streets with outreach workers and educate folks on the streets about the ordinance, which is another thing we asked about and couldn't get an answer on. They also said they needed to train the police to enforce it, which, like I said before, they were unwilling to comment on whether or not that training took place, and if it did, what it looked like. You know, I can't really speculate to how much of this work has actually taken place. I mean, we covered it a couple months ago, and police said that they'd not received training yet, and that's kind of the most recent update we had. Yeah, I mean, it really is, at this moment, completely unclear the level of thought or preparation that has taken place. And I think, you know, it's this ordinance, since it was introduced, was the majority of people involved with it find it confusing, find it hard to understand, even harder to comply with. So, you know, the fact that it's Wednesday, November 8th, and they're going to start enforcing it on November 13th, and there's still no updated map, there's still no clear indication of the type of enforcement the city's going to be doing, how proactive the police will be in, you know, issuing these warnings and citations. I think it's, you know, pretty concerning, obviously. But, you know, for all we know, the city has this very elaborate plan, but aren't willing to talk about it for some reason.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, one rationale for why the city might be so tight-lipped about enforcement is because of ongoing litigation. What can you tell us about the lawsuits surrounding the daytime camping ban?
In all likelihood, I think that the city's unwillingness to comment is because of litigation. Oregon Law Center sued the city, saying that the ordinance violates state law ORS 195530, which was passed in 2021. And it says essentially that any city that passes a law governing what the state calls survival activities, so, you know, sit, lie, sleep sort of ordinances, they have to be objectively reasonable. They have to take into account available resources like shelter and how they're kind of policing these things. Oregon Law Center, their position is that this city ordinance does not comply with the state law. And they're also saying, in their opinion, that it violates the state constitution. So they're trying to get the law taken down, essentially. So they filed that lawsuit September 29th. At the time, they also filed for a temporary restraining order, which a judge did not grant, essentially trying to stop enforcement before it began. And the judge said, basically, you know, you might have a case, but you won't until enforcement starts. Now, Oregon Law Center is actually filing a request for a preliminary injunction, which, you know, is jargony, but essentially means that until the bigger lawsuit filed September 29th plays out, the city would not be allowed to enforce the camping ban. The hearing for that is tomorrow in Multnomah County, so we'll know more at that time. But those are the current and ongoing legal battles over this ordinance.
Well, as we've said, the daytime camping ban puts new constraints on people sleeping outside, that they must take their belongings with them during the day and that they can't rest on public property. Now, one alternative for them is daytime shelters like Blanchet House and Rose Haven. What's been their involvement with the city on this?
This is kind of an element of the story that we've been following since the beginning. Rose Haven and Blanchet are two of the very few daytime service providers in Portland. Rose Haven is the only daytime service provider for women, children, and gender diverse people. They're both located pretty centrally to downtown, so they already have quite a bit of traffic. But initially, when Mayor Wheeler introduced the ordinance, some of the communications from the city were basically, you know, because the obvious question is, well, where are people supposed to go? And one of those answers was to these day shelters. At that time, there'd been very, very little communication between the city and Blanchet and Rose Haven. That has continued for the most part, that general lack of communication, though there has been more since they kind of, you know, made an issue of it in the press that the city was kind of making them part of this plan without consulting them. There's supposed to be some funding, but as Rose Haven told us, they don't really have details on what that looks like yet, how, you know, how they're supposed to get it, how much money. But, you know, they're dealing with, both of them are dealing with a big issue as far as the lack of space that they have now that people are bringing their belongings with them. You know, it's obviously giving them less capacity physically to serve guests during the day. And I mean, the uncertainty around the ban has created a lot of anxiety and, you know, fear amongst homeless Portlanders. Both Rose Haven and Blanchet told us they've been dealing with a lot of that. A lot of people struggling right now, kind of this added pressure. You know, the city has relied heavily on its own daytime storage facilities that they've referenced. They only have one, so, you know, it isn't this network of places where people can take their things. There is a single retrofitted shipping container under Steel Bridge that Central City Concern is contracted to operate during the day. And that's the only place that people have publicly provided to take their things.
Well, for this article, you also spoke to Portland Street Medicine. What are their preparations and concerns going into the enforcement?
Portland Street Medicine essentially said, you know, that this kind of increased anxiety and destabilization was a very predictable outcome of the camping ban, even though it's not being enforced. And, you know, that's part of the issue with this lack of clarity, is people already kind of lack trust for the city. So, you know, there's a fear that they will just start enforcing it, which is why people have been carrying their belongings around more since this was introduced over the summer. But for Portland Street Medicine's part, you know, the observation is that people are struggling with this. And then there's the very kind of practical logistical issue that that creates for their team as they're trying to go out and give people medical care and kind of maintain some consistency for people on the streets. If people, you know, they've spoken in the past about how much sweeps complicate their work of trying to track people down. You know, this kind of daily turnover that this ordinance creates is even more problematic. So they're working, and then of course, like, people having to lug all their stuff around is not good for people with you know, chronic health conditions or folks with disabilities. So they're working to connect folks on the streets with prepaid cell phones and wagons and you know, carts. So at the very least, they can hopefully call their healthcare provider. They can, you know, move their things from place to place without having to take on a ton of strain as far as carrying everything. So that's the way that, you know, they're kind of shifting their operations a bit to try to help meet people's needs right now.
What are some of the takeaways that you hope listeners and readers get from this story?
You know, I mean, I think the lack of communication is really concerning. I think as a member of the public and as a journalist, you know, this ordinance and its enforcement is funded by tax dollars. Obviously, you know, we're talking about something that could increase the rate of arrest for homeless people in Portland, which is already about 50% of all arrests in the city, despite only making up 2% of the population. So, you know, I mean, this is a law that is targeted at people experiencing poverty and homelessness and could only serve at this point, you know, it's a real risk that it serves only to further complicate their lives. And the city won't even tell people how they're planning to enforce it and where people can go to avoid legal trouble. And that's a big problem, I think. So, I mean, I think that's the main takeaway. and, you know, to kind of keep an eye on, especially November 13th, depending on how this preliminary injunction hearing plays out. You know, I think it's important that journalists and the public are paying attention to how this is enforced and who is or is not being given a chance to avoid facing legal penalties for this.
If folks want to read the piece for themselves, what's the best way to do that?
Best way is to go find a vendor. You can go to our website for a non-exhaustive list of common vendor posts, streetroots.org under the vendors tab. But, you know, you can typically find them at grocery stores, Saturday markets, things like that, libraries. Otherwise, Streetroots publishes everything for free on its website in the week following our print publication. And the new issue came out today.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to walk us through this today. And thank you for your reporting.
Yeah, thanks so much. I hope you have a good rest of your day.
That was Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Streetroots, talking with me about their new article. It's called Feeling the Squeeze: Homeless Portlanders and Service Providers Prepare for November 13th Sleeping Ban Enforcement While the Mayor's Office Dodges Questions. More information is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Well, that's right. You are listening to News from the Boo, your look at the news inside KBOO. I'm your host and news director, Althea Billings. I've got some great folks here with me today. Our membership director, Artie Wall. Say hi.
Hello. Boop, boop.
We've also got our brand new development director, James Neal, here. Say hi, James.
Hi, everyone.
Woo! Okay. Well, thank you both for being here with me on News from the Boo. We're going to get to know James a little bit more in just a minute here, but I want to start with Artie. KBOO just finished our fall membership drive at the end of October, and you're our membership director, so how did we do?
Everyone. We did fantastic. We did great. We met all of our goals, both internal and external. It was fantastic. We gained a lot of new members, so many that we are still processing everything. Wow. And what else was good about it? We had a couple of successful merch campaigns, and it was great.
There were some great specials that folks did.
Yeah, some amazing specials. So look forward to that for our next drive as well. And I want to also take a moment and thank everyone who listened in, everyone who donated, and everyone who volunteered, and especially all of our programmers that were pitching the entire drive. That is a huge reason why we met our goal.
All right, we did it. Happy to report. Good news on the Boo today. News from the Boo.
Fantastic news.
Fantastic news. Well, I appreciate the rundown. If you think of any other things we need to applaud, you let me know. But I want to talk to James a little bit, our newly minted development director. How you doing?
Doing pretty good.
Let's switch you over. All right. Can we hold on? Say something again.
Doing pretty well. How about y'all?
Okay. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Little technical difficulties here.
Well, you know, sometimes the thing about being on mic. And this is your first time, so I can tell
Absolutely,
you this.
Yeah.
The thing about being on mic is that you want the mic to be on and working. And so now we can hear your lovely voice.
We can
hear
your
lovely voice. Hi. So I'm sure our listeners would like to get to know you a little bit better. Can you tell me a little bit about you?
Absolutely. So I am originally from Charleston, South Carolina. I grew up there and then had a 17-year career as a chef before moving out to Oregon, and over the past several years started getting into nonprofit work, working with some mutual aid organizations, and doing some contract work, mostly grant writing, and doing a lot of work in food sovereignty and food justice kind of work. And over the past couple of years I've been moving more into broader scope nonprofits, and now I'm here.
Okay.
Really excited to be at KBOO. Been a long time listener. Started listening to KBOO in 2015 when I moved to Oregon, and Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, okay. What's your favorite thing about KBOO so far? Or can I ask that question? And then a separate question being, what shows were your favorites back in 2015 or over the time?
Well, my favorite thing about working at KBOO so far is this is a very diverse and kind of dynamic work environment. We're doing a little bit of everything kind of all over. I've never worked in radio before, so it's a really fun new experience for me and good thing to try my hand at, and I'm really excited about getting into it. My favorite shows on KBOO, very into the jazz programming, love Democracy Now!, and all of the bluegrass and Grateful Dead shows over the weekend. I always tune in on Saturdays. I'm a big fan.
All right, the Saturday block. Yeah. So you are our new development director. What does that entail?
Also a little bit of everything. I help with all of our fund drives as I started on the tail end of this most recent fall drive, and we're currently in the works for our year-end drive and getting things together for that. Any kind of company, corporate sponsorship, corporate relations kind of work, as well as grant writing is a big part of my work. And yeah, I'm really excited to be kind of finding new avenues to find resources for KBOO to keep doing the KBOO thing.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Well, okay. This whole chef aspect of you and understanding what's going on there. What was your like favorite thing to cook, or do you not like cooking because you spent so much time as a chef?
I still love to cook. A lot of my restaurant background was in Japanese cuisine and Asian kind of fusion food. I worked at Mama Fuku restaurant in New York that is no longer there anymore, but I spent some time in the Mama Fuku universe and doing a lot of very similar type food, a lot of ramen towards the end of my career in New York. My favorite thing to cook now, I love doing roast lamb. I love doing kind of like longer kind of braised style dishes, more stew stuff, and kind of the set it and forget it style cooking is still some of my favorites.
Yeah. Where do you like to eat in Portland?
Ooh. I'm a big ramen nerd. I love going to like Baka Umai is probably my favorite ramen place right now. They do a lot of really interesting bowls. Where else? I'm a big fan of Shalom, y'all. I think that's like me and my wife's favorite place to go. Like, if we're going out, it's a really good place to stop in. Also, Pacifico de Oro is a little place in St. John's where my wife and I live. Whenever we're kind of feeling a special occasion date, we usually try to go there. It's a great spot, and they do great, like, handmade noodles and stuff.
Nice. Well, hang on. I want to ask Artie, too. You and I have had long conversations about brunch recently, but broadly, like, where are your favorite spots in Portland? I'm getting off track, but now we're down the road.
I'm so glad you asked. James and I actually have talked about this. We both love the spot in St. John's, Tienda Santa Cruz. It is one of those mixes of store / restaurant, and I think it's the best place to get tacos in town. And I actually have told you before that the reason I moved here was because I had those tacos. I guess right now I've been eating a lot of feel good as well. A bunch of us at the station had that for lunch, and it was pretty good.
It was pretty good, yeah.
Very nutritioned up.
More quinoa than I've taken down in quite some time. I'm feeling great about that. Okay, I have another question for you that I didn't prepare you for. If you were to start a radio show at KBOO, what would you want it to be about?
Oh, my. I would probably want to do, just as somebody who's been a private contractor and worked with a lot of different nonprofits that are in different sectors of nonprofits in town, Portland has a lot of really great organizations doing a lot of really cool work, and I would love to do a show that kind of highlights that work and can invite executive directors or ops directors on and kind of talk about the struggles of nonprofit life and also, you know, a lot of really cool missions that are happening in town.
Yeah,
I think that would be a fun
If you were going to do a music show, what genre would it be?
Ooh, I don't know. I listen to a little bit of everything. Listen to a lot of Grateful Dead and a lot of bluegrass and a lot of, I also listen to a lot of like metal and punk music and hip hop music. I think I would do, I don't know. I'd have to think about that one.
Okay. That's well, you ruminate on it. You don't have to. You don't have to start right now. Artie, same question. If you were going to start a show, what kind of show would you try to start?
I think I would start a show for niche music history, kind of just very specific, and then kind of a overview of the history of the music, listening to some of the music, and I'm especially interested in music as a cultural response to times of violence and war. Yeah, just a little, very specific.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. That's an interesting pitch. I will say that my own experience of KBOO, it was from like listening to KBOO DJs of all different types of genres that I realized I can listen to any kind of music with the backstory, because they so many of our DJs are so awesome because they give you like the what's been going on behind the scenes, or like how did we get here with any particular song. And so I feel like I get exposed to so much new stuff. I was like, I never would have turned this on, but these two band members are fighting and I need to hear about it. That kind of thing. Okay, well, coming back to James for, you know, getting our listeners acquainted with you, what are some things that are coming up in your department? What should people be looking for, development-wise?
Development-wise, I am very excited to be in, we're in the early planning stages of our year-end drive. We got some really fun stuff coming up for that, getting some fun new merch ideas, getting talking about the possibility of maybe doing an event here at the station, or maybe possibly an open house. We got to kind of work out some of the logistics for that. What else? This is more exciting for me. I don't know. I'm working on trying to find some grants to kind of help support our station, the goings on here. Yeah,
I think supporting that, what we're doing,
supporting what we're doing,
doing new things with grants.
Yes. New stuff is
very exciting.
Yeah,
my perspective it. As somebody who doesn't super know about grants, to me it's like hidden knowledge that you have the knowledge of, like how to do grants, and it's like everybody wants to know how to do that, and now you're here doing it for us, which is so exciting.
I try. It is a lot of guesswork, and it's a lot of just trying to keep up with an ever-changing grant landscape. There's a lot of foundations trying to do really good stuff, and also a lot of people applying for grants, so it's a little bit of a balancing act of them trying to manage that load.
If we have volunteers, who are they able to help out with that kind of thing?
Absolutely. It's the grant writing and end of things, or even grant research. Absolutely. If any volunteers are out there that are into looking, digging through kind of the internet and trying to find grant opportunities, I'd be more than happy to talk to them about
it. Okay, nice. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
The best way is to find me via email at development@kboo.org.
Okay, great. And Artie, do you want to plug your email if people want to talk to you?
Yes, shot in the dark. It is membership@kboo.org.
Yeah, we need, you know, we could have less intuitive emails, but here we are. Do we have any final words for the folks at home? Anything else we want to say?
Well, I would just like to say, you know, thank you again to everyone who, has been continually contributing to KBOO, donating to KBOO for the drive, but especially just all of you for listening. It's really the reason we stay on air.
Yeah, we do it for you. All right. Any last words from you, James, before we wrap?
I will kind of echo what Artie said of just thank you all so much, and we appreciate your support. And if anybody has fundraiser ideas or wants to get involved, please feel free to reach out. We're always here.
We love good ideas. That's another thing.
We're always into good ideas.
We love good ideas. All right. Well, with that, I want to thank you both for being here with me this evening. You've been tuned in to News from the Boo, your look at the news inside KBOO. I've been here with Membership Director Artie Wall talking about our recent successful fall drive. Thank you for that. And Development Director James Neal, getting to know him as our newest staff member. I've been your host and news director, Althea Billings. Keep it locked on KBOO. Keeping democracy alive is next. Thank you.
Tune to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY hardcore, and beyond. Every month features a different theme where we delve into the history of a specific genre topic or musical location, or simply churn out the best, brightest, and ugliest sounds from around the globe. Join me, DJ Krauthammer, every first Friday night, Saturday morning of the month, at midnight till 3 a.m. for Oil for Kisses to experience it for yourself. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Hi, this is Dwight Yoakam, and you're listening to KBOO.
After years of being in the wilderness, is it possible that a new